When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, this is Evan Clark, Deputy Managing Editor of WWD, and I'm here with Lana Staffgard. She's Chief Operating Officer of the Better Cotton Initiative, and we're going to be talking about sustainability and better cotton and all things nature and right with the world. So, Lana, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you, Evan, for inviting me. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. So I just wanted to start off to maybe, could you just give us an explainer on what Better Cotton is, what you guys do over there?
Sure. We're a cotton sustainability. We work in with small farms, with large farms, with retailers and manufacturers, and kind of essentially everyone in cotton. We're working to get us all moving towards more sustainable cotton production. Looking at farm level primarily, you know, how can the people who grow the cotton that goes into your t-shirt have a better life and live in a better environment?
Right. And why the focus on the farmers? Like why it seems to kind of going back to first principles kind of, but why is it most powerful to focus on the farming community?
Well, there's around 300 million people in the world associated with cotton production. It's the biggest natural fiber. We all wear cotton daily, right? And it also goes into money and you know, all sorts of things. Most of them are smallholders, and most of them live in poverty and are exposed to climate change and other biohazards, pesticides, and you know, they live in poor environments. So it's essentially about making sure that we can continue wearing cotton, can continue growing cotton, and the people who supply it lead decent lives, right? Like you and I do.
It sounds like that's the part of the chain that might, in some ways, need the most help.
Absolutely, they're almost invisible. They have very little power. They never get in touch with the big commercial players. They're just producing the raw material and kind of go about their lives, right? So we want to, you know, make sure that they're seen and that they have their own voice, essentially.
Right. Okay. So we'll circle back to the small farmers and all the ways that you're working with them. But we've come to the end of the year. What's the biggest win, biggest loss for sustainability and fashion cotton in your world?
Well, there's a lot of momentum, I would say. I think it's a big win on awareness and kind of actors throughout the chain understanding that fashion has a big, and apparel has a big impact, and they have a big role to play in the solution. So I think we're starting to see action, we're starting to see commitment, we're starting to see quite a lot of ambition where companies say, you know, we're going to do something that we don't know how to do. You know, we're going to really cut carbon emissions. We're going to work for fair conditions in our supply chains and so on. So I think it's gone up a notch, the awareness and the understanding of what this means for the sector.
Right. So does that awareness, when you talk about that, are you thinking more about the brands and the industry or the awareness among the consumer?
It's a little bit of both. Right now, I was primarily thinking of the industry and mm-hmm. the brands. I think as a sector, we've been lagging behind a little bit on some sustainability aspects, and we're speeding up now. The consumer, I think, is getting there as well. We can see more and more awareness, and we can see some action in, you know, when they go shopping. But it's, you know, when you shop for apparel and fashion, you know, you want it to look good.
Right. It's, and that's what I, because sometimes I hear the terms of the debate in the fashion industry. Certainly people, a lot of people talk a good game. Now, whether or not they follow through on that is maybe another topic. But I think consumers also, through the rise of fast fashion, you know, we see, you know, consumers are interested in price, they're interested in style, and on a larger, on a broad sense, I think it's fair that consumers care, you know, sustainability kind of falls farther down the pecking order. Is the industry moving faster than consumers? Do you need, I mean, just where do you need the pressure to come from? Because it seems like ultimately the end consumer wins. They end up kind of getting what they want or what they say they want.
Yeah, they do. I mean, for me, I think industry should be probably half a step ahead, right? So kind of quite close, but leading. If you run too far away from your consumers, you lose them, right? So you need to be quite close, but still keep the pace and the direction, right? And I think that's also where governments and legislation come in. It's kind of the brands can make it attractive, and the brands can make sure that they fulfill the basic expectations of the consumers, because whilst they want the fit and the style and the price, to a large extent, they're also expected that, you know, human rights and environmental boundaries are respected, right? So it's becoming just kind of, well, that's the way you do business, right? So legislation plays a role as well in moving things across.
Right. So, I mean, this is, I think, in any of this, any conversation around sustainability, it's a simple idea, but it's a really a complex task. You're talking about, you've got consumer sentiment on one side, you've got the realities of business with their profit motive, you've got governments are legislating away, and you've got the farmers at the beginning of the process who want to live healthy, happy lives and you know, be adequately compensated for all their work. Where do you start? Well, where does Better Cotton starts with the farmers, but where should we be thinking about how do we think about the solution? Do you need to tackle all of this at once?
I mean, it's difficult not to tackle it all at once, right? Because they're all interlinked.
Right.
So we have the farmer at the heart of what we do, but a lot of the actual work we do is trying to mobilize the industry and engage legislators to create kind of the enabling environments. You know, I'm sorry if I'm kind of using terminology, kind of jargon, but creating an environment where action can be taken, right?
Right.
So working for more transparency and then working with the retailers and brands to help them see their supply chains and have more understanding of the conditions in which cotton is grown, and then kind of motivate them to invest from that perspective.
Right. That seems to be, from my view, one of the biggest changes that we've seen over the past, you know, 20 years. I think 20 years ago, if there would be some kind of problem somewhere in the supply chain, it wasn't our fault. It was just the company we hired to do this. And then there's always a subcontractor where there's some kind of problem. And it seems that companies can't get away with that anymore. They own, in the consumer's eyes, you know, they really own the full process.
Yeah. And that's also being reflected in the legislation coming through the EU as well now, right?
Where
the end customer, so the retailer and brand essentially, is responsible for all the practices in their supply chain.
Right.
So that will require, hopefully, and lead to much more partnership approach with their suppliers and with the manufacturers on tackling the problems, and then kind of cleaning up and making sure that they know where their products come from and they know who's touching them and they know that it's done under good conditions.
Right. Hey, and so could you just, for our listeners, give us like a little primer on that legislation? I want to talk more about legislation, but how does that legislation work? Where is it? What's it get right? What's it get wrong?
So there's a number of different, and I'm not an expert in legislation, but there's coming legislation both around claims, you know, what can you attribute to a product or to your own company, and then there's also legislation on due diligence, what must you know about your supply chain, right? So it will require some engagement and so on, and obviously with legislation, it's always difficult to think about all the unintended consequences that might fall out of it. So I would say we've seen some parts where you have due diligence requirements, or where you have specifications on what can go into the inputs for a raw material, that would make it very difficult for smallholders to participate. Right? So we're feeling, don't make it only available for big corporates with all the systems, right? Because we still have small companies and we still have small farmers who are trying to supply these big global supply chains.
Right, but that sounds like it's helping to set the rules of the road of a certain way, this is what you're expected to know about your supply chain. Yeah. And at least if 20 years ago you didn't need to know anything, except these are the people we pay to make it for us. Yeah. That's you're at least getting started. You're taking that big multi-faceted problem and kind of breaking it into smaller chunks that can be addressed. So Better Cotton has voluntary standards for the industry, but you called this year saying, you know, we've got these standards and the people who want to use it, and that's great, and they embrace it. But you've argued that it's time for government to step in with more kind of mandated standards. Is this the kind of work that we're talking about here, or does it go beyond that?
It's linked to that. So, you know, with the government setting the baseline of, you know, what's just hygiene, right? As a voluntary standard, we can then go further. So we don't have to spend voluntary effort on just getting the basics right. So if everyone does the basics, there's opportunity to actually then elevate further ambitions. And obviously, you know, we're an organization with 200 people. If the EU says you have to do this, that's the reach of that is just way beyond what we can do as one initiative.
Right. If the EU does what Better Cotton's doing, you can be Better Cotton and drill down. What would you tackle next? If the EU was doing what you were doing, what would be the next?
Well, what we have in our sights is how can the farmers get more? How can they get rewarded better? How can they get recognized better? Because what we're seeing now, and that was at the COP as well, so agriculture is rising in prominence in the climate change agenda. Mm-hmm. It's both a driver of emissions, but you also have the solution there with new ways of growing and capturing carbon and working in nature positive ways and all of those buzzwords, right? But If we want the farmers to change how they grow, if we want them to experiment with their livelihoods, and we want them to do the mitigation for us, we need to reward them for it. We need to incentivize them for us. So we're thinking, you know, how can we get more money to the farmer? So not more money to us, or not more money to programs, but more money to the farmers who are out there.
So where does all this money come from?
We think it should come from the industry. We think that the industry should bear the cost essentially for creating and selling and producing more sustainable products, decent products. And there's always that challenge with price then. So consumers, should they pay more? Is it right to have a T-shirt for $5, or should it be, you know, a bit more expensive and last longer?
Right.
So the business model, we need to start thinking about the business model. What's the business model that supports fashion, supports economic churn, and that supports the farmers?
And where do you get in industry? Where do you get the most traction? Because I'm thinking about this where a lot of brands, anywhere from, I think there are low cost players whose mission is we're going to sell inexpensive t-shirts, and that's kind of they're pushing on that end. But beyond that's maybe an issue of its own. But beyond that, you have a lot of fashion companies are trying to do this work anyway. Are trying to move far. They see how well luxury performs. They're trying to kind of get farther away and move higher up. In some ways, I think it's almost a push for fewer better things. Is that kind of? I mean, where are your natural allies in the industry?
We work both with the low cost and the high end. I think they all need to move along. And I mean. We need to have affordable things as well, because
right.
Everything can't be luxury, because you know that wouldn't be accessible to the vast majority of the people in the world. So we need things to be affordable,
right? And that's probably where the volume is.
That's where the volume is, and we found a way of working quite constructively with high volume retailers and brands. Because the way that we work is on improvements idea, right? You know, let's start with the farmers where they are, and you know, work on a journey. Let's not try and be perfect overnight.
Right? Yes, not letting what is it? Perfection being the enemy of the good, or you know, whatever. But so more on these farmers. Where are they?
Oh, they're everywhere. So,
right, because I thought a lot of cotton comes from the U.S. and from China, right?
So India is the biggest currently in the world, the biggest producer of cotton, and essentially all of the farmers in India are smallholders. Mm-hmm. China is big as well, and they have a mixture of large farms and small farms. The U.S. is massive, and as is Brazil, and there you have large corporate farms. With their own set of challenges and opportunities. But then you have a lot of smallholders across countries in West Africa and Southern Africa, Central Asia, Pakistan, so all over.
Yeah, they're all over, but concentrated too in some of the big markets. What is it, I'm going to be breaking up small farmers and the big farms. What are the changes you want small farmers to make and why?
So small farmers, initially we're just looking on kind of basic training on input, how to water more efficiently, how to understand what beneficial insects are, so you don't have to use chemical pesticides, because you can use natural ways of protecting your crop, and looking at ways of retaining moisture in the soil and promoting biodiversity. So essentially all of these things drive profitability for them, so they have lower input costs and then have a higher margin when they sell their product.
Right. So have a better business and a better life while being gentler on the climate, using less water,
using less synthetic inputs, you know, reducing the need for pesticides and so on.
Is the message different for the large farmers?
The large farmers are usually quite efficient as it is. They've run quite, you know, smooth businesses, but they can also have problems with overuse of pesticides. They can have problems with low soil fertility, lack of biodiversity, and so on. So with them, we can often work with on kind of more advanced regenerative practices, so they can stop their tilling and that protects the soil, or work more with cover crops. So the crop rotation that gives new nutrients to the soil, and that reduces the need for synthetic nutrients and so on.
Right, right. All right. So lots of moving parts. You're busy. What's on tap for 2024?
On tap for 2024 is, well, we just launched our traceability system. So it's going to be a big push on keeping that, rolling that out, contributing to more visibility, better understanding where cotton comes from, ultimately leading to retailers and consumers knowing what the cotton is in the garments. And that is, of course, also then combined to what we call the impact marketplace. And that's the mechanism for driving funding straight to farmers, so creating new revenue streams for farmers. That's kind of our focus.
Right, right. So, and there's controversy around cotton from China, and traceability is a big deal. So how can you just explain your traceability? How does it work? How can you trace what kind of, how can you tell what kind of cotton, how do you keep track of it?
How do we keep, it's a challenge. So we have a platform already, and we have a system and a chain of custody that we have, some 11,000 actors on who kind of, they know how it works. So we're then layering in that new requirements into that system and then new monitoring. So essentially it's then adding on a demand that when you previously, you could, with mass balance, you need to sell a cotton garment, but it's not, it's not mandated what cotton's in it. Now it has to be better cotton. Now it has to be segregated. It has to contain better cotton. And then on top of that, we'll do the kind of monitoring and auditing to check that it's correct, right? That it is the physical fiber that follows the transaction.
Well, it sounds like there's lots of work for you to do. Well, good luck with all that. Thank you so much for coming. This is WWD Voices, and we really appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Ed. My pleasure.
All right.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.